Chapter 26. Blocker got up at 5:30 the next morning. He'd gone home to get some rest before he and Werner went to print a graphic to speak to Weissman. It was still dark when he got up, and his wife and child were still soundly asleep as he went into the bathroom to shower. He showered and dressed, putting on a pair of gray pants and an olive shirt with no tie, and made himself a coffee to waken up. He stood in the kitchen as the water boiled, and looked out of the window over his garden, and up at the wispy gray clouds which were being blown hurriedly across the edge of the horizon. The ground was wet from overnight rain, and the fallen leaves lay scattered over the lush green grass which had grown lengthy, as it had not been tended to for some time. The air was still and windless. When the water was ready, he poured it into a large mug, filling it almost to the brim. He added 2 spoons of sugar, and then took a lengthy sip. It was warm and reassuring, and as he drank the caffeine down, he could feel it instantly take effect, and he felt brighter and more energetic within minutes. He finished his drink, put the cup in the sink, and walked back to the bedroom. He tiptoed quietly through the room so as not to wake anyone, over to his son's cot, and leaned in and kissed him goodbye. His son Claude was 6 months old, and was lying sound asleep on his back, his tiny chest moving in and out as his lungs breathed. He pulled the covers up over his son to keep him warm and walked back into his bedroom, stopping to kiss his wife goodbye, too. And then he left the house. The sun was starting to rise as he drove the 3 miles from his home to the headquarters in the center of Geneva, and he could tell it was going to be a calm and beautiful day. At this time of winter, the sun was low in the sky, and he had to pull down the visor to keep it from shining directly into his eyes. He drove along the banks of the lake and pulled into the city, crossing the river, and then he drove straight up to the office building, parking his car in a side road round the back. Blocker walked into the offices to meet Werner, but as he did so, he couldn't stop the anxious thoughts that filled his mind. He had witnessed firsthand the assault on Suleiman's villa, and he knew that anyone associated with the deranged colonel would be dangerous. He pressed the call button for the elevator and waited patiently in the lobby for it to come, his fingers restlessly fidgeting in his jacket pockets as the elevator made the journey down from the 4th floor. When it arrived, he got in and pushed the button for the 7th floor, where he exited and walked through to Werner's office. It was 6:30 now, and the office was quiet and empty. Werner sat in his office, already looking over the files on Printographic and Weissman. He'd probably been there for a while, when Carl knocked on the door and walked in.
"Morning, sir," he said.
"Morning, Carl. How are you?"
"Good, sir. A bit apprehensive, though."
"Don't worry. That's good. It wouldn't be right if you weren't. Come, sit down." Carl sat down in the leather chair opposite the desk and crossed his legs.
"What's the plan then, sir?"
"The plan is we are going to pay Weissman a visit." Carl nodded, and an anxious smile spread over his face.
"Now he may or may not even be there. But I want you to be prepared no matter what. We are dealing with a career criminal here, and he's mixed up in some serious business, so you have to be prepared for anything. This is a low-key affair. After the mess that Montreux became, we can't do this on a record. This is all unofficial. It's just you and me. Do you understand what I am saying, Carl?"
Blocker paused for a moment.
"So there is no backup then, sir?"
"No. Just you and me on this. It has to be that way, I'm afraid. This is strictly off the record, so if you have any hold-ups, I need to hear them now."
"No, sir. That's fine."
"Good. Now listen up. The factory opens at 8, but we are going to go in at 7. We can't tell for sure who is going to be there, but the earlier we go, the better. And this should minimize the number of workers on the premises. We have to do this subtly and do it right. His involvement with Suleiman could be completely innocuous, or it may not. We'll find out when we get there."
"Yes, sir. I understand."
Werner took out his gun and checked the clip and replaced it in the shoulder holster.
"This is just precautionary. I don't think we'll need it. He has no record of violence, Werner said, turning to Blocker. But you'd better check your weapon just in case.
Blocker did the same, taking out his Colt 45 and checking the chamber of the six-shooter, and then tucking it neatly into its holster. He then picked up three cases of shells, which he put in his pocket, and a few minutes later, they were in the car, and they were on their way. Werner was driving, and Carl sat next to him, nervously checking his weapon again and again. It was only a few miles to the factory, and Werner was taking it slowly, hoping that the minutes on the road would help calm his anxious colleague.
So, how's the family car?
They're good. Thank you, sir,
he said, examining the chamber again.
Claude sleeps through until feeding time, about 7.
That's good. I guess that gives your wife a decent night's sleep.
Carl laughed uneasily. He appreciated Werner's attempts to distract him, but there was only one thing on his mind, and that was what was in the factory ahead of them. It consumed his mind and excised any other thoughts.
How old is the little one now? He's got to be nearly 6 months or so by now.
Yeah, it'll be 6 months next week, sir.
Werner tried to keep his man talking, but he could tell Carl's thoughts were elsewhere.
All right, when we get there, take it easy, Werner said in his austere accent. We just need to talk to this Weissman, okay? Nothing more. Just follow my lead and keep your eyes open.
Carl listened and took it in, but he couldn't help the worst-case scenarios that were running rampant in his head. He had loaded his weapon, but couldn't stop checking it, taking it out of the holster and opening the barrel time and time again. And each time he checked, he felt himself more and more pumped up. Being a desk man and unaccustomed to working in the field, he felt somewhat exposed. But his loyalty to Werner was unquestionable. He opened the window to let in some fresh morning air. As the cold, damp air rushed in, the sun had not yet risen fully to thaw the overnight frost, and it blew over his freshly shaven face. He shuddered. They drove along the main road out of the city, leaving its safety and familiarity behind, and made their way towards the industrial estate. They turned right off the main road into the small winding street of the estate, and Werner slowed the car till they were no more than crawling along. The adjoining factories were empty and quiet. It was 10 to 7, and only a handful of men could be seen going about their work. The factories were tall and gray, uniform in their lack of character or distinction, and were depressing buildings compared to the refined architecture of the city. They were buildings built for purpose, not for appearance, and this was reflected in their blandness. Made of gray and green iron sheets, they were bolted together haphazardly and had not been looked after, the rust around the edges and joins now threatening to take over the entire exterior, banishing the lack of color and replacing it with the metallic orange hue of dereliction. All of the windows of each building had bars or grills across to keep out unwanted trespassers. Carl felt the eyes of a dozen suspicious faces watching them as their car edged through the estate. Printographic was nowhere to be seen. Werner scoured the buildings as they passed by, looking for the names of the companies, but it wasn't easy. Some had names, others didn't. Some had what used to be names, but the letters had fallen by the wayside, making it now almost impossible to decipher what remained. Werner did not even know if the name still applied to whatever company was currently occupying the room inside, and it was obvious from the outside to even the most casual observer that the buildings had stood unchanged for a great many years. The car neared the end of the road and the row of warehouses when something caught Werner's eye. The last building on the left at the end of the row was different. The lights were on inside, as they were in several of the buildings, meaning someone was in. But what drew Werner's attention were the vehicles outside. In the parking bays out the front sat a large white van, and next to it a sleek and slender Mercedes sports car, both dwarfed by the two large and overflowing dumpsters which occupied the rest of the space. And they both seemed at odds with the rest of the estate. The van was large and clean, and it had obviously not been used for the transportation of anything heavy or bulky. Its paintwork was pristine and undamaged, and the only sign it had been on the road at all were the mud marks that streaked up the back and sides from the wheels. The Mercedes was instantly out of place among the vans and trucks of the other factories, a symbol of wealth and money far removed from its current location, and it gave away a lot about its owner. "That's it there," Werner said, pointing to the last factory on the left. He pulled up the car and turned the engine off, and the two of them got out, Werner first, followed by Blocker, and they walked up to the entrance. The large goods entrance was closed and shut, its large paneling dirty and covered with graffiti. So the two agents stopped outside the small entrance. It was two doors wide and closed, and there were no windows, so they couldn't see inside. The paint was chipped and peeling off, and Blocker stood staring at it as they waited. Werner pressed the call button and waited. Nothing happened, so he pressed it again, and this time a distant voice sounded through the intercom.
"Yes? Open up. This is Inspector Schmidt and Detective Blocher. We need to speak to Mr. Weissmann."
Werner wanted to downplay their identity so as not to cause any undue panic. The intercom stayed quiet for a minute, and then the same voice replied over the feedback and static, and the door unlocked. Werner pushed it open, and they walked inside. The corridor was dark and cold and unusually quiet. The day's work was obviously yet to start, if it was going to at all, and no one could be seen. They walked along an empty corridor, its colorless and barren walls punctuated only by a single door, and out onto the main production floor. Large printing machines stood lifeless in the cavernous room, idly wasting space and time, and the sides were stacked with unused supplies of paint, ink, and paper. Werner could tell that the warehouse had not been used in its printing capacity properly for some time, and his guard was immediately up. He walked over to one of the machines and looked inside. It was empty. No ink, no paper, and it was dirt dry. He went over to the next one, signaling to Carl to stay where he was, and climbed up a couple of steps to look inside its mass of cogs and machinery. Inside, it too was empty. But as Werner ran his finger along one of the printheads, he could feel it was wet and warm, and he could tell it had been used recently. He holstered his weapon and leaned inside, and could see, caught up among the gears and mechanisms, the unmistakable sight of a U.S. $10 bill. He leaned over and tugged on it, but it was jammed fast and would not give, as if someone had hurriedly pulled the paper out of the machine, and this was what got caught and left behind. He reached over and pushed his arm under the still-hot pistons of the arms of the stamp and tugged inside until a part of the paper came off. The ink on it was still wet, and the dollar insignia smudged under his fingers as he held it in his hand. Mr. Weissmann had most definitely not foregone his wayward ways. Werner folded the torn note over and put it in his pocket and stepped down from the machine to rejoin Carl. A light was on in a room at the end, and Carl led the way forward towards it, and his fingers rested twitchily on the gun under his left arm as they approached. They could hear someone inside, but could not see them.
"Just take it easy, Carl, okay?" Werner offered.
"Mr. Weissmann, we would like to speak to you, sir. Come out, please."
A man then emerged from the room. He had a pair of blue jeans on and a vest on top, and his hair and face were wet from recent shaving. He was carrying a towel in his hand.
"Yes, I am Mr. Weissmann. What can I do for you?"
Weissmann spoke slowly but reservedly, and Werner instinctively did not trust him.
"Mr. Weissmann, put the towel down and put your hands on your head, please,"
Werner ordered. But Weissmann did not listen, and he kept walking towards the two agents, his hands still covered by the drooping towel.
"You say you are the police? Let me see some identification, then," he asked,
and his voice barely disguised his contempt for the two men standing in front of him. He pulled his right hand out from under the towel, and wiped the remaining shaving foam off of his face.
"Show me some identification," he said again.
Werner kept his eyes focused keenly on Weissman's hands and told Carl to take out his identification, which he did, slowly pulling it out of his coat pocket and holding it for Weissman to see. Werner never took his eyes off Weissman, and his gun was trained on his body the whole time.
"Now put the towel down slowly," Werner ordered again, but still Weissman refused to, and he still kept walking forward.
Werner shouted for him to stop, but he wouldn't, inching closer and closer until he was only a couple of yards away, and only then did he drop the towel. His hands were clear and empty, and as the towel fell to the ground, Weissman laughed.
"You cops are very jumpy, aren't you?"
"Don't move," Werner barked, and the smile vanished from Weissman's face as his gaze turned to the elder of the two agents.
"So you think you're a funny man? Put your hands on your head and turn around."
Weissman did as he was told, and Werner walked up behind him and pushed him against the side of the nearest machine, kicking his legs apart and searching him for weapons. But he was clean. He turned him around and shoved him down into the small wiry chair next to them.
"You are in a lot of trouble here, Weissman. And with your record, you are looking at some serious time."
Okay, take it easy. I haven't done anything."
Weissman wrestled unnervingly in the chair, and his head shifted from side to side as if he was looking for something.
"Shut up. I'll tell you when to talk. So if you haven't done anything, would you mind telling us what this is?"
Werner said, pulling the tattered note from his pocket.
"Look, it's nothing big. I just print out some notes when I need to. There's no need for guns. I'm just a small-timer."
"Small-timer?" Carl exclaimed incredulously and was instantly met with an icy glare from Weissman.
"Not anymore, you're not. You've just moved into the big league, my friend. And what with your record, you're looking at some big time to go with it."
"Making a few notes is not big time. You've got me all wrong," Weissman said, standing up out of his chair, but Werner pushed him back down. "I said don't move."
"It may not be a big deal to you, but counterfeiting is a serious crime, Mr. Weissman. And whether you realize it or not, you are in serious trouble here. Now I'm going to show you a picture of a man, and I want you to tell me all you know about him."
Werner took out a photo of Suleiman and held it in front of Weissman for him to look at. His eyes rolled over the photo for a long time, and he looked up at the two agents and then back to the photo. He thought very carefully for a moment before replying.
"Mr. Hassan? Yeah, this is Mr. Hassan. What do you want with him?"
"I'll ask the questions here. Just tell me why he came to you."
"Look, it was no big deal,"
Weissman offered, squirming in his seat.
"He said he needed someone to make him an American passport and Social Security card. That was all. He came to me and I did it for him."
"When was this?"
"About a month ago or so. I don't really recall."
"Mr. Weissman, I'm beginning to tire of you. Now you'd better start recalling pretty damn quick."
Okay. He came to me and asked for these things. I made them for him, and he paid me and then left. That was all. I had never seen him before, and I never heard from him again. I have made copies of them if you want to see them."
"Where?"
"Over there, underneath the guillotine."
Carl walked over and tried to lift the guillotine, but it was heavy, and he struggled to move it. He put his gun back in its holster and tried the guillotine again with both hands, this time, and it budged a few inches. Werner and Weissman looked on, but only one of them was watching Carl. Weissman's eyes were focused somewhere else entirely. Carl strained as he tried to move the weight, and he lifted it slightly and pushed it over with his hip, putting his whole body behind it. But as he did so, a flash of movement caught Werner's eye, and he turned to see a shape prowling across one of the walkways up by the roof. Silhouetted against the small windows which ran around the top of the building for sunlight and ventilation was the shape of a man. But before Werner could warn Carl, two gunshots ricocheted out through the warehouse. Werner dropped to the floor, and Carl did too, dropping the guillotine back down after his efforts to move it. But as they lay on the floor looking for cover, Weissman got to his feet. He ran across the floor space, jumping over Werner and Carl, and ran towards the door. The figure in the shadows, positioned like a sniper in his vantage point over the entire floor, continued to fire, and gunshots rang out, pinning the two agents to the ground. But Carl jumped to his feet and gave pursuit to Weissman. Werner saw his eager colleague and called out, but it was too late, and Carl was off, running across the warehouse, his hand instinctively shielding his face. Weissman had a 10-yard head start, but Carl had closed him down quickly, and he leapt on top of his fleeing adversary, knocking him flying. Carl got up and pushed Weissman over, preventing him from getting away. But as he stood up to handcuff him, another gunshot rang out. It was just a single shot this time, but that was all that was needed. The bullet struck Carl in the back and flew out of his chest at the front, sending blood spurting out into the air and over Weissman. He clutched at his chest as he fell forward onto his knees, hitting the floor inches from Weissman. Werner looked up and took aim and let off two shots, the first of which fired straight through one of the ringed windows at the top of the warehouse, but the second found its target and struck the shooter dead. He looked over to Weissman, who was looking straight back at him. The two looked at each other for a moment, equals for a split second in the exchange of bullets and the loss of life. And then Weissman got up to his feet again. He knocked over a table as he staggered towards the door, frantically trying to escape, but Werner was not going to let him get away. He clambered to his feet and gave chase, running across the warehouse floor and stopping to check on Carl, who looked badly wounded, blood draining out of his body and pooling up on the ground around him.
"Don't worry about me. Just get the bastard,"
Blocker stammered. Werner left him and went after Weissman, kicking open the door that Weissman had just burst through and looking across the room, but he couldn't see him. It was full with stacked-up chairs and tables and old and disused machinery, but nothing else. There was nothing moving, and the hulking metal machines didn't conceal anyone. Werner stopped and stood still and listened carefully. It was quiet, and he couldn't hear anything. But just when he thought Weissman had got away, he suddenly heard the sound of a door opening to his right, and he rushed towards it. Down a long corridor he ran, his arms scrambling at his side as he willed his aging body on. He rounded the corner to see Weissman at the end pushing open a fire escape. The door at the end opened, and a brilliant ray of sunlight burst in, blinding Werner for an instant. And while facing into this light, he aimed his gun and fired. 2, 3, 4 times he pulled the trigger, firing along the corridor at the blacked-out shape at the end. And then it was silent. The door at the end swung open as a gust of wind outside caught it, and Werner slowly stepped along the corridor, his eyes adjusting to the sunlight from outside as he approached the warmth and brightness which seemed to draw him in. The door was now swinging back and forth, but something was in its way, preventing it from closing. And when Werner got to it, he could see it was Weissman. His body lay on the ground, and the door was swinging and banging into his shoulder as it tried to close. One of the shots Werner had fired had caught him in the leg, and the other had struck him in the neck. And he lay on the floor, stretched partly over the concrete floor of the warehouse and partly over the dirt and gravel outside. Blood was running from the wounds to his leg and neck, and Werner could tell he wasn't breathing. But he bent down and looked for a pulse anyway. There was none. He looked out briefly into the street, but didn't see anyone. He then checked again for a pulse, but he couldn't find one. Weissman was dead. He retraced his steps back to the main hall of the warehouse and went to Carl, but he feared the worst. The bullet had struck him in the chest, and he'd gone down instantly, and Werner could see the horrendous wound his friend had sustained. Carl lay face down in a pool of his own blood, and Werner rolled him over, but it was too late. His eyes were wide open, and blood was still running from his mouth and out of his lifeless body. He bent down and closed Carl's eyes. Werner shook his head at the waste of yet another life, and he struggled with himself. It had been his decision to involve Carl, and it had been his decision to bring him along that morning. without informing the department or bringing in any backup. And it had been these decisions that had led to Carl's murder. There was no other way to look at it. As these thoughts filled Werner's mind, he stepped up and walked over to the guillotine Carl had moved. He pushed his hand into the hole below where the machine had stood and fumbled around underneath until his fingers found something. It felt hard, like a piece of metal, but it was thin and it bent under his strength as he pulled it out. In his hands, he held copies of the passport and social security card Weissman had made for Suleiman. Clean and fresh, the quality of Weissman's work in forging the passport and social security card was some of the best he'd ever seen, and would fool even the most trained eyes. Werner had seen enough counterfeiters over the years in his line of work, in Switzerland and Geneva especially, to know that this was quality work. Above the address and the date of birth was the name Suleiman had requested, the name Sabina was using in the United States. And it was the name Werner hoped would enable Jack to catch her. It read Jane Beckett, and it would be the vital piece of the puzzle that would eventually lead Jack to apprehending Sabina Talib. End of Disc 6.